This is Xformation, brought to you by the Center for Growth and Opportunity at Utah State University. I'm Will, and today I'm again joined by my colleague, Caden Rosenbaum, and we're going to be talking about a little bit of things related to antitrust today. And I think that I'm probably going to be peppered with a whole bunch of questions from Caden. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't know how strong he's going to come off today.
I'm feeling pretty strong today, Will. I feel strongly in questioning you. Strongly about questioning you today.
So we had a bit of a, we were on a webinar with some folks earlier this week, and there was actually a whole bunch of other stuff that I think that we wanted to get to. In particular, some of these questions about antitrust, and obviously to kind of like set this up, I mean, today, as we're recording, there was a, you know, at least one hearing in the Senate on antitrust and competition issues. There was one earlier this week, I think, in the House. There'll be one tomorrow in the House. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on in antitrust. Klobuchar has a bill out. We obviously have the House antitrust report that came out the end of last year, which is kind of setting the tone in some ways.
400 pages. Yeah,
I know that was a beast to get through.
It really was. It was even a beast to just open up on your computer. I mean, the thing threatened to crash my computer every time I opened it. So
even the footnotes. Were the footnotes properly blue booked?
I don't know. I didn't have time to do that much. Okay, 400 pages is a lot.
Yeah, I have to go through each one of them. Who did all the citations? Did you do the citation checking for that one, Caden?
No, thank you, and not a chance. So let's talk about antitrust.
Yeah.
Today, Senator Klobuchar was bringing up the fact that whenever you go to book a hotel or whenever you go through Google, anything like that, you're going through basically a concentrated big tech company. Yeah. And that fact alone, she argued, is enough to bring increased antitrust enforcement reduce the burden.
This is really fascinating, right? I feel like everyone's really singularly focused on this idea of a gatekeeper status for each one of these companies, which is what, like, I mean, this is literally how it opens up in the House antitrust report, which is just all of these commentary about gatekeeper status and, like, you know, oh, when you go to search, you search through Google or whatever it may be, even though that's kind of an odd thing to say even about Google when you're acting in search, because it matters a lot. You know, what's your intention, right? My understanding, there's only like 2 or 3% of all Google searches that are even monetized. So it's a pretty low portion to begin with, because you can't monetize stuff. Like, the kind of stuff that I'm looking up is like, oh yeah, who's going to, you know, I was looking up like William the Conqueror earlier today, you know, I'm trying to find out my namesake. And it's like, well, what kind of ads are you going to serve on William the Conqueror? You know,
right. I like don't know. William the Conqueror, Coca-Cola. Is that something that they
I don't
be
know.
Doing?
Maybe
he's who French, comes up so. With that advertising scheme? Like, they sit down with Coca-Cola, they're sitting at a table and they say, listen, whatever their name is, whatever they're searching, if it's related, just put it on a Coca-Cola bottle, and that's what we want you to do. Here's a couple million dollars.
Have they ended that campaign? The this Coke's for you, and then it has like people's names on it?
I don't think so. I bought Kinsey one that said Richard on it the other day and gave it to her and said, your name is Richard now.
I mean, I don't drink Coca-Cola. I don't drink Coke. I'm a Pepsi man. So.
Oh, well.
I know, right?
That's another discussion. But first that's off.
For another day.
That's the whole problem, right? Like, people think they're sitting down at a table with these other huge corporations. Making these deals that are like non-existent don't actually make sense in practical application. What do you make of it?
I guess this is what's odd to me when you're even talking about, so like kind of, you know, looping back into this gatekeeper status, right? You have Google. I mean, I'm of like many, many minds on this, in particular because, you know, at the end of the day, there are obviously only a limited number of services that when you're talking about online platforms in particular, and really the things that we care a lot about, there's only a certain number of these services that would even be able to be produced in any sort of quote unquote like open market, right?
Right.
So the question is that ultimately comes down. So I guess this is kind of hinting around this issue, which was pretty endemic and is pretty endemic in these conversations, which is the problem of quote unquote concentration, right? The number of firms is lower than what we would want it to be, which I've never really understood. That's like a very, very deep and difficult question to answer. How many, you know, what's the optimal firm level in any given industry? And especially when it comes to something along these lines where there are, where transaction costs or information costs particularly are hugely important, we should actually expect that there should be few suppliers of these markets.
Well, so, I mean, when you're talking about these markets, it's different from Coca-Cola versus Pepsi, right? Because Coca-Cola and Pepsi are actually selling products versus these Googles and Facebooks and Twitters that aren't selling you anything per se. You don't pay any dollar amount for these services. I mean, what is your take on how these digital platforms are different from, you know, the aluminums and the Pepsi Coca-Colas?
Yeah, and this is something that I think that is driving a lot of this conversation in particular around antitrust, which is the question of effectively free, right? We're talking about a lot of these services. Not necessarily for Amazon and Apple, which I think is a slightly interesting kind of wrinkle to all of this. But when you're talking about Google and Facebook and Twitter and all of these basically social media platforms or information platforms, the service itself is free. And so even figuring out or using the traditional antitrust tools and methods just don't really yield the kinds of clean and clear answers that we should expect, at least in all these other in all the other ways that we might use these sorts of tools. So, you know, one of the things that at least the FTC has done over the last couple of years is go after a number of hospitals. They brought up some pretty big cases, if I recall correctly. And those, it's pretty easy to see what the price effect is. You know, it's easy to kind of trace the prices over time. You know, you can get access to that data. So they can do this in a whole bunch of industries. But when you're talking about a zero priced good, that the technicalities of the analysis get really, really deep very, very quickly. Primarily because, you know, the industry itself is embedded in a model and is structured around a model where free is critically important. And it's really, really hard to articulate what a market around free products should look like, right? And that's something that I constantly go back to, which is, what is the expectation? What is it that we're trying? What's the world that we're trying to create with antitrust? And that's what I don't know. I often leave a lot of these hearings just not satiated by any good answers, because it's not necessarily clear that we know what's the world after we've appropriately applied antitrust to Google and to Facebook. Does that just mean that they have some sort of, are they broken up? Right. And I feel like that's oftentimes the part of the conversation. It's like, you know, finish your sentence. Like, what is it? What is exactly that we're saying from the antitrust? Cause it's like, oh, we need to do more antitrust enforcement, X, Y, and Z. And it's like, well, wait a second. What is it actually that you're talking about? You know, are you talking about these industries, or are you talking about some other industries? Cause a lot of these industries are still, especially like the social media, the big tech platforms are still, they still have actually pretty high productivity numbers. And just personally, you know, there are a number of concerns about productivity throughout the economy, but when you look at like Facebook and Twitter and, you know, Apple and Amazon, the things that are constantly cited in the cases that we often talk about, it's like, those are the places where you have high productivity, where you do have more output with fewer, you know, with fewer inputs, like the kind of stuff that you actually would want a logical antitrust regime to kind of tackle would be those areas where you have high concentration and low productivity. And you know, yeah. I really just haven't seen anything good that really gets at that that really like tackles that problem pretty clearly for these big tech companies. Maybe we should just start writing that paper.
Maybe just everything else we have to start with. Yeah, that's it. No, and going back to this free concept though, I don't want to pull you away too much, but what about the argument that your data is worth something, that you are effectively giving up your data, which is worth something, and inherently that is the price of these services? I know that you've done some work on it. I just want you to reiterate.
You want me to go through my Senate hearing where I was lambasted by some of the senators along with everyone else in the panel when we said that creating... Yeah, no, the idea of the value of data is... That's a tough, tough problem. Right. Because data usually only exists within a certain kind of relationship. and valuing data within a certain kind of relationship itself is actually a very difficult problem. It's, you know, we use basically these really, I don't want to say complicated values, but they're called Shapley values effectively. That's probably the easiest way to
Shapley
do this.
Shapley values.
Shapley values. Yeah. Shapley.
C-H-A-P?
S-H-A-P-L-E-Y.
That's just the Shapley. Stain on my, know, my right? college, you know, know. Shaps with the C-H.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. So it's like, that's one way to understand what the value of an individual would be within that sort of relationship. But I think you brought it up
in terms of, you know, that resort that went under, they went into bankruptcy and the value going into bankruptcy included their information. But once they gave it away, it was worthless. Like no one knew what to do with that data, right? Isn't that?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Is that the value itself within that relationship? So this is the idea around Caesars. So the Caesars Casino had this rewards program, and the rewards program data was valued to, I think it was just shy of $1 billion, right around $1 billion as the value of the asset. But the ombudsman report very clearly said, well, you know, this may be valued or may have a value of $1 billion, but it basically is probably not going to be valued or have a value to any other buyer because there are all these other things that really have to go and to congregate in order to create the value of that data. And I think that's actually a really, really interesting problem that we're still trying to grapple with and understand it, which is very clear that, you know, within the relationship of Caesar's casino and, you know, Caesar's palace effectively, that the value of the rewards program is pretty clearly embedded within that company. But if you try to pull it away from the company, it doesn't have value. And the one other thing that I would really mention about this, or at least try to tease out within this conversation, is there is this really interesting thing that people constantly say, which is if you're not paying, then you're the product. And, you know, I personally hate that idea because one, the idea that you quote unquote have to pay and yet you can still have exchange, that doesn't exist in a decent amount of markets, right? What about Wikipedia, right? If you're not paying for Wikipedia, then you're the product of Wikipedia. That doesn't make any sort of sense for Wikipedia. And yet we still see this sort of exchange occur. And that's because platforms have a unique sort of relationship to exchange. That in fact, there are two different sorts of quote unquote products. There is one product, which are the advertisements, right? So the advertisers are buying advertisements or advertising space, you know, or, what's it called?
Inventory.
Inventory. Yep. So advertisers are buying inventory, but at the same time, users are demanding in the product. They actually want the thing that they want. The thing they are consuming is content in all of its various, you know, in all its various sorts. It could be rage tweets or it could be pictures of a family dog, right? And all of those things are your dog.
There's lots of my dog on the internet. And
there is a lot of your dog.
People want that picture.
It's gorgeous.
He's a gorgeous dog. He's a great dog. I wore him out today. We walked like 2.5 miles.
Yeah.
But that's one side of the market, right? And the advertising is the other end, right? Like right under Bernie is some kind of ad for whatever I'm searching that week. Probably shoes. I need some new running shoes, right? So that would be the ad under him. But
that's retargeting, right? That's a retargeting ad if you're searching for shoes.
But these lawsuits and antitrust are interesting because on the one hand, they're saying that these platforms have span, meaning they have accumulated the data on users that allows them to compete effectively.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. But then they say, and they're making all this money from it on the advertising end. And instead of proving some kind of harm with the user end, which is the span, they just show the mass of revenue coming in from the companies. Is it fair to just silo those two things apart, or is it more of something we should take together? I'm sort of talking about Amex now as a multi-sided market. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, those two things are, I would hope that my personal hope, and I think maybe I'm also pushing you in this direction and, you know, hopefully you're getting towards this direction, but
I think I'm picking up what you're laying down.
Yeah. You're picking up what I'm putting down. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the market probably needs to be analyzed on both sides, right? I mean, at least I would expect that it needs to be analyzed on both sides, which makes it particularly difficult to do this sort of analysis at a high level.
much.
And you know, and maybe I'm too naive in some of this, but it almost seems to me like they're probably going to have, they may have to do this analysis, this Amex analysis, right? And mm-hmm. Amex has a whole bunch of, this is the case that came down from the Supreme Court in, I think, 2018, if that's correct.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And it was an interesting case and basically was related to this idea of platforms and the case itself. You know, the Supreme Court, decision cited a lot of really, I think, very intelligent, economists who have worked pretty extensively on platform economics and have literally written the books. It's like Schmalancy and Evans have literally written the books on platform economics, which it's right actually near my foot.
There's Hovenkamp too. Don't forget about Hovenkamp.
That is true. Hovenkamp has done a lot of really good work on this. And I think he was also cited in the SCOTUS opinion as well, right?
I want to say he was.
Okay.
Either way, I've read it. I've read it myself because it's very useful.
I know. The reading lists for these cases are quite extensive. I really don't envy anyone having to get into this space. But what I think that the Supreme Court had set up, or at least had teased, or at least had created the space for, was this ability to talk about and talk through and to think through whether or not these platforms really should be understood as a different sort of beast in the digital age. And I think that's also what was striking to me about the House antitrust report, which doesn't really seem to be said too much, right? What's really the gap and what's missing from that House antitrust report is a broader acceptance, like, say, okay, so these things are platforms, right? If they are platforms and they do have this, you know, it's like the report talked a lot about gatekeepers, and it's like, well, what if they truly are gatekeepers? Then, you know, what comes from that, right? It's like, okay, sure, that's the first step, but then let's do the second step analysis and let's think through how these things truly are platforms, how they're unique within the ecosystem. Do they shift again? Do they shift the analysis or do they not shift the analysis? And all those things all together is, again, what I think that Amex had suggested. And what you can hear this dog barking in the back. I wonder if this dog is getting enough attention, by the way. I really kind of feel sad for it, honestly.
Well, I mean, we should probably talk about attention markets, but
look at this transition.
This transition is just on point.
Yeah.
On point. If you want to talk about attention markets, but before we do,
I'd love to talk about
it. Just to set up some background on the Amex case, it was the problem in that case was that Amex had these contracts with merchants that they couldn't turn them away. They couldn't turn away consumers with American Express cards and say, hey, please use your Visa because I don't want to pay the Amex fees. So that was the contract, and the question was whether those were, you know, anti-competitive or an exertion of monopoly power. And in doing that analysis of looking at that, the court said, listen, we can't just look at the credit card merchant side or the consumer using credit card side. We have to look at both because it's a choice, you know, whether the consumer wants to use Amex in the first place, and second, whether the merchant wants to accept Amex. Those are two different unique classes of consumers. And they said we have to analyze them both together as one whole two-sided market. So that's the background for anyone listening that has no idea what we're talking about. We say Amex.
And what's interesting is that the government, that was FTC, right? Yeah, that was FTC, not DOJ in that case.
It's Ohio v. American Express.
Oh, Ohio.
So that was
I'm pretty sure that was DOJ then. They didn't brief on the two-sided markets idea, if I recall correctly, in this, which I think was really, really fascinating. Basically, this issue kind of came up in the lower courts, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, again, for anyone listening to this, please do check me on this. But from what when I did this research, I was really, really surprised that at least the government itself had never really briefed on this idea of doing a double-sided market, even though it was kind of bubbling up. And which is fascinating to me as well, because pretty clearly, if they would have done that analysis correctly, they probably would have won that case.
Yeah, I think so.
Would have, right? You would have just said, this market on this side, we don't see any changes in prices, or mm-hmm. we don't see any changes in benefits. On this market, we see higher prices, you know, ergo.
Exactly.
So that's what's interesting about like the Amex case. Now thinking about it, I'm like of two minds here. It's like if the government would have actually done a good job in briefing it, they probably would have won.
Right, like done their homework and set up the argument correctly instead of just rushing in.
Yeah.
And calling out harms where there maybe exists, but there's a lot of other moving pieces. So
attention markets. Do we want to talk about attention markets?
The question is, do you want to talk about attention markets?
Oh, I've got the attention for it.
Do I have your attention on this topic? All right, perfect. Yeah. So there's this idea that all of these digital platforms, Facebook, Google, Twitter, YouTube even, they're mm-hmm. all in the market for attention, to get you to watch something, put your eyeballs on the screen. And from that, they gather data that they can then monetize. Is that too simple? Is that a way to make the, you know, in antitrust analysis, you look at the relevant market first and you see who the players are in a market, and then you see who has the share of that market. So is this antitrust or is this attention market view oversimplified? Is it undersimplified? Is it enough to set up a relevant market analysis?
I think that there's two answers to that. I think that it is correct that that probably is where there is competition between these providers. Will that be the narrow market definition that a court will accept? Probably not, right?
Really?
Yeah, I don't think. Do you think so? I couldn't imagine that a court would accept something that broad, right? They're looking for something super narrow that you have substitutability between these two products in a very real manner. I mean, at least that's true.
Yeah, at the same time, you could include like advertisers, just general advertisers in the same market. They also want your attention. Billboards, my television is always throwing stuff at me.
True.
I mean, it's a good point, but at the same time, I mean, Professor Wu is not an uneducated or non-thoughtful man, right? He's written a very good piece. Few of them. Yeah.
Yeah, on attention markets.
So it's not that it's totally something we can write off, right?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I mean, I would hope that the courts would probably accept that, but I can't imagine that they would, right? I feel like there would probably be I feel like at least when you go through this, it'd probably be a much more narrow analysis. And I always forget the name of, and I should have done so much more prep to figure out the name of that, like the product market niche. Oh, I always forget. There's like some really like weird technical name for however you define it. But the substitutability question, I think, is still really, really open when you're talking about advertising as well. Yeah. I've been trying to find for years basically any evidence or let me step back and say it like this, right? That we know that if you're actually a marketer, if you're an advertiser, you have a number of different options. And in fact, and I've been trying to construct what you would think of as like a, you know, like a breakdown or a profile of advertisers, right?
Right.
So the way I kind of see it is that you have about half of the market, which is pretty astute, or at least is something akin to being an astute advertiser. And then the other half of the market really isn't, and I don't want to say they're not astute, but it's like, they're not doing this, you know, full time. It's not something that they're super, super, super into the weeds. You know, it's one part of their product, and they're just trying to get something out there to get and drum up more attention, right? At least that's kind of what I see. Now, again, the numbers could be a little different. You could see, you know, it could just be 25% of the total advertising market, or the total number of advertisers are super, super embedded.
Right.
Still, you know, when you talk to these sorts of advertisers, the way that they think about even developing advertisements for different audiences, they're not using just a singular, you know, they're not just using a singular platform. And that already exists on these on the internet anyway, right? That if you're an advertiser, you're not just going to go and actually use just Facebook or Google. You're going to use a couple of these ad platforms in practically speaking. But that also then adds and kind of teases this question when we're talking about advertising markets, because that's another of the markets that are being singled out for with Google in particular. They have a case related to the advertising markets. But, you know, again, to try to package that all together, it just seems to me that we're still kind of under theorizing about advertisers themselves and how they perceive the substitutability of these different products.
Right. Yeah, and really important, because you can't get the same kind of targeted advertising and knowing that someone is going to see your ad that you can on Facebook or Google, right? Like, what was the number? It was like something in the 500 millions that advertisers spent on Super Bowl advertisements. to reach like 100 million people for 30 seconds.
Yeah. And
Isn't that nuts?
It is an insane amount of money. And then you also have the Superfund problem, which is that advertising effectiveness is basically how can I be nice about this, right? As an economist, the space of advertising effectiveness is effectively open. We really don't know how effective advertisements are.
Yeah, and but like really Facebook and Google keywords, for example, are the closest you can get to measuring that, right?
Yes.
So then that sort of tees up my next thing, right? So Google is putting in these cookie, or it's removing its cookies, right?
Yeah.
You can't go and buy whatever you do with third-party data for cookies.
Yep.
And before this happened, Google wasn't technically a walled garden. In advertising spaces, what that means is you have space on your site or however Google wants to advertise, and you sell space to advertising firms or just companies, whoever buys the advertising space. And you have total control of who is going to be advertised. But before this, they would sell out third-party cookies. I'm probably botching this totally. Kinsey's going to hate me for botching this. But basically, they had this sort of openness, and you could sort of divvy that out in a more decentralized manner. But since they're implementing this cookie thing, they're removing their cookies, it's back to a walled garden. And that's an interesting problem.
Yeah.
There's an entire industry devoted to just those cookies, and it's just gone away.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an entire industry. Yeah, exactly. The entire SEO space, I think, is going to be completely shaken by what's happening. This is happening across Apple as well.
The SEO? Right,
what is that? SEO?
Yeah.
Search engine optimization.
Search engine optimization.
Yeah.
I suck at acronyms.
That's all good. Ask. And then there's also search engine marketing, SEM, SEO. Yeah. And so, but then you compare that to, so you compare, for example, the pure, so this, you know, but again, okay. So yeah, SEO, prime example, right? The amount of money that's spent on advertisement, on pure advertisement, is the last time I checked about equitable to the amount of money spent on search engine optimization. So it's like fascinating. It's like, okay, wait a second. So you can either place an ad or spend a whole bunch of money to make your content go all the way to the top and be the, you know, the best links that go, that get up there. And these are a whole bunch of different options for marketers that are astute, right? That there's a whole bunch of different options to basically get your content and to be effectively fungible or substitutable among advertisements. So it's not just the idea that, like, okay, you pay more money and that is also the market. So I guess that when we're talking about this, you know, at least, and I'm sorry, I'm like so singularly minded on this idea of substitutability.
It's probably like, good, because it's such a big issue.
Let's just focus
on that.
But I mean, it worries me that even that sort of conversation, even the SEO conversation, is basically non-existent when we're talking about these markets, and we're talking about, you know, quote unquote ad tech markets. It's like, well, wait a second, you know, there's just as much money, or, you know, at least a decent amount of money that is spent in the search engine marketing, search engine optimization space as there is in the digital advertising space. And there's other ways to get your name out there. You know, you might go and use social media as a social media platform and to try to drum up that sort of support. So you may not spend money purely on advertisement. You may spend money, again, much more on the marketing side of things, or having somebody that is trying to engage with your consumers. That sometimes can be a little dicey, right? That can actually, there's been some really interesting work that basically suggests that the more you engage with people, that in fact, it can lower the total value of your company. And that kind of goes against
the public relations.
Yeah. It's like really, so
don't get too spicy on the internet. Is that what you're saying?
What was that?
Not all press is good press.
Not all press is good press. You don't want to be spicy on the internet, you know, all the time. So,
all right. Well, I've got one last question for you, because we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Why should people care about antitrust? What is our expectation for a good job in shaping this argument or reforming antitrust, if that's what we decide is best? What is the big point that people should take away?
Why should you care about antitrust reform? That is like, that's a really key question that I don't.
I mean, let's say we break up Facebook and now we have two Facebooks. Is that what we want? Is it not what we want? Really, so, I don't have any opinion. It's not a big part of my life, but others maybe.
That is, so, but this is like this, right? Isn't this the most fascinating problem? This is actually a really fascinating problem, which is what's the goal? What are we trying to shoot for? Yeah. And if there are problems, let's just say, generally speaking, we do know that concentration, at least at the top level, you know, the kind of the big industry levels, that those things have increased, which is, I think, a generally understood trend that's occurred. Right. But if that's the case, then do we necessarily just care about breaking up big tech, or do we care about all of these other things that potentially are just as important? Like, who's talking about mining and minerals and concentration within mining and minerals, and or, you know, all of these other things that that do and are probably really important for competition policy in our society? So I guess that's the thing that I feel like is the, you know, I don't have a really, really clear answer on this, right? The big nut graph, why should you care about this thing? Why should you care about these big tech hearings? I'm not sure I have a good answer for that. Because if we really do care about concentration, and I do think that we need, again, I think that we need a lot closer and more nuanced look at concentration. But when you do, if you do care about concentration, then it's like, well, big tech is one area among a whole bunch of other areas that we care about, right? Manufacturing should be another big area that we care about. And, you know, and other information goods or other information sectors.
Or airplane choices.
Airplane choices.
Do I want to fly Southwest or American Airlines? That's literally it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, I mean, has there been, that's a super great question. You know, we're talking about mergers and acquisitions within Google. Where's the conversation about some of the most valued companies in the world? You know, you're exactly right. It was an American and who else merged? Was it American United?
Oh, well, a merger. I didn't know about
the mergers. The mergers that happened in throughout the 2000s, right? Yeah. Not to say that those mergers from the last time I really did a deep dive on the airplane merger, you know, the airline mergers, they were clearly a response to a very, very clear problem within airlines, which is that no one was making money, and you really did actually need to probably merge in order to save money. But then you had this kind of like these series of years, like 5 or 6 years, where you actually did make money. And now we're back, obviously, to them doing really, really poorly. But again, it's like, okay, so, but let's talk about then airline mergers instead of just writ large, just this like big tech issue.
It just seems like people are angry about, you know, content moderation problems, data privacy problems. And I heard someone talking today that, you know, monopolies drive down wages and drive up prices. There's the labor argument in this too.
There was a conversation.
It seems
about
like
newspapers.
Antitrust, newspapers. It seems like antitrust is being used as the wholesale catch-all fix to this, just a way to punish the Zuckerbergs and the Gates out there, instead of actually being explored fundamentally or thoughtfully. In a way that would actually produce better outcomes for consumers. That's my thought on it. But
I mean, I couldn't agree more.
If you're saying that we're not at a point where we can make that determination, I would trust that more probably. Given
no, I think you're exactly right. I think
that three.
No. I think you're on exactly the right. You're exactly on the right on the right trail here, right? I mean, this is exactly the issue. We care about these things, and we're caring about big tech companies because they are of the moment. The broader question that I still am still trying to wrap my head around is, okay, yeah, cool. Why is it that we're then pulling in all of these big tech companies consistently? Why are we bringing cases against the big tech companies? Why aren't we bringing other cases in other spaces if we care about mergers and acquisitions? You know, why? Oh, I don't know. It seems to me that this is, they're making a lot of money. It's easy probably to go after them. They don't have a lot of friends. Like, there's a lot of reasons why you'd want to go after big tech companies. You know, it's an
only
easy
at the
thing.
Top.
Yeah. It's an easy thing to be critical of. But again, at the same time, I guess to put a kind of ending point on all of this and the real
wrap
thing.
Wrap it up with a bow.
Wrap it up with a bow. With a bow tie? I should wrap it up with a bow tie.
All right.
But I'm not wearing a bow tie, by the way. That's clearly not evident. It just
To those listening in, I'm wearing a t-shirt. Goodness,
no.
So.
But I guess I'm just gonna leave it. I'm gonna leave it at this point in this juncture, which is that there are probably much, much more important things that we should be focusing on with antitrust. And I think that we really do need to get to a more cogent, thoughtful place. Instead of the back and forth, instead of all the stuff that we talked about today. You know, one of the other things that even came up in this hearing, which is something I've been I don't get it, right? I don't get sometimes why policy isn't included. So, you know, there's this thing, if you're going to do a merger, right? When you do a merger, you have to do a pre-merger notification. And basically you tell the agencies, hey, we're merging and this is going to be the size of the deal. And this threshold, this pre-merger notification threshold, is set by the FTC. The value is basically tied to inflation, but it's tied to a 2001 amendment to what's called the Hart-Scott-Rodino Act. And that pre-merger notification threshold, that's like not even really part of the conversation right now either, right? So it's like the small things you probably could change. The stuff that you probably could do with antitrust pretty quickly that I think everyone would agree upon, you know, getting more funding to the FTC and the DOJ, doing the kind of revamp and organization. There should be way more economists at the FTC and the DOJ than currently exist. They should probably
more economists
be able to
than lawyers probably.
Yeah. I mean, there should be more of a balance. I mean, there just aren't that many economists that are working in these agencies. So it's like the low hanging fruit. I think it would be super easy to get done. But again, that doesn't really drive news and conversation, and that doesn't really kind of nice political points that everyone wants.
And here's a second metaphor, not to piss off Aaron Sorkin or anything, but you can lead a horse to water, but you can't force him to drink. You know, so
I think on that,
let's call it.
Yeah, let's call it.
Let's call it.
Thanks much, Caden.
Thanks, Will.